Hello and welcome to the Catbird Speaks, your podcast for BP Southside, the local site covering the White Sox for Baseball Prospectus. My name is Nick Schaefer, co-editor-in-chief of BP Southside. I am joined by my better half in that endeavor, co-editor-in-chief Colin Whitchurch, still in Austin, Texas, if I'm not mistaken. Hey, Colin.
Yeah, what's up? I don't know about better half, though. Maybe less angry half.
And Colin is outnumbered, as there are two people in New York City on this podcast. Obviously, White Sox podcast, as you think, New York City and Austin, Texas. Frank Furke, how you doing, Frank?
Good. Glad to be on.
Yeah, it's been a while. Obviously, housekeeping-wise, I always feel a little silly telling people where to find the thing they're already listening to, but we are on iTunes. I think we're on Stitcher. I've never tried it, but obviously, if you want to download it and on the go, subscribe. I think positive reviews are welcome. Obviously, it's been some time. I've been pretty slammed. Life got in the way. I think that probably goes for all of us. But the White Sox weren't super inspiring for a lot of the year. But
I think at the start of the season, we said we were going to try and do it weekly. And I think we did like four podcasts all season. So, yeah, we suck.
I mean, did you watch the White Sox? I think there's a good reason for that.
Yeah.
Well, we did a podcast at the beginning of September about LA, and then the only other thing that happened of interest in September to the White Sox, seemingly, was Michael Kopech's arm falling off.
Well, Nick did a great podcast with Jeff Paternostro, our lead prospect writer, when the midseason top 50 came out. But I feel like this is the first time Nick and I have even podcast together since like April.
It's been a minute. I mean, I guess we could, this is sort of flipping the order, but it probably makes more sense to lead off with this stuff. I mean, the White Sox finished up yesterday, recording on the night of Monday, October 1st, whenever you may listen to this. So, you know, it's all done. There's no speculation on how guys might finish the year or whatever it is. Did you have any general thoughts before I sort of guided towards specific topics? I'll throw it to Frank first.
It felt like everybody ended the year on a down streak. I know that's not quite true, but I think it's most conspicuous on the pitching side. I mean, they lost, 8-9 to close the year? So I think that's what I'm taking away from September is Kopech got hurt, and then it seemed like all the other pitchers, I don't know if you want to say they took a step back, but they certainly, you know, last year they ended the year with a few guys saying like, well, maybe they could be real for next year. You know, maybe they'll be actually quite good. And this year there wasn't even that. And, you know, that isn't perfectly dispositive insofar as Carson Fulmer had a great September last year as a starter. But, you know, it just felt like there wasn't anything good to take away from the end of the year.
Yeah, I wrote today at BP Southside kind of, looking back at the season and the state of the rebuild, and you know the thing about rebuilds as a whole is there's so much of it is based on hope, you know, hope that everything is going to go right, and you look for progress from certain pieces that you think are going to be a part of the future. And I think we saw some of that this year, but I think we saw more negativity than positivity, just to put it in the simplest terms possible. You know, a lot of these guys are still young, and not every prospect is going to come up and immediately be Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna Jr., you know. But, you know, Moncada was an above-average player this year. He wasn't the type of player that you have hopes for when a guy is a number one prospect in all of baseball. You know, I think Tim Anderson took a step forward. You know, his offense wasn't world-beating. He was a, you know, above average defender, particularly in the second half. I know FRAA judged him as an above average defender. His offense was pretty much in line with last season. I know he cut his strikeout rate down a little bit. He increased his walk rate a little bit. The pitching, though, like Frank mentioned, you know, that's the biggest source of frustration, because you see guys like Rodon, like Giolito, like Lopez, and it seemed like for every instance where it seemed like they were going to take a step forward, they would then take two steps back. I think Lopez probably showed the best, you know, season-long progress if you're looking at everything from April through September. But even then, you know, I don't think people who thought he was best served in the bullpen entering the season are completely dissuaded that he is a starter now. So it's, you know, you look for progress and you look for reasons for hope. You know, I know that the rebuild's not necessarily over, but it was just a really defeating season, you know, outside of just the wins and losses.
Yeah, Frank, you were right. They did lose 8 out of 9, and obviously that Twin series in particular, they were just, I would go to say, oh, the game started, and I'd go to check, and they'd already be down like 8-0, and I'm like, all right, well, so much for that. And it is discouraging that Rodon's ERA was rapidly catching up to his peripherals. And Rodon in particular was weird because his peripherals varied so wildly depending on which metric you used. I think DRA was really down on him, even when his ERA was really good. Whereas I think ex-WOBA was like pretty happy with him, and FIP was thought he was like slightly below average. So, I mean, FIP isn't perfect, but it's the easiest thing to sort by team here. And do you guys want to guess who had the best FIP of any White Sox pitcher through 100 innings or more this year?
Was it not Lopez?
Lopez is second at 4.64.
Was it Shields?
No, he was over 5. That's what happens when you don't strike out anybody. You give up a lot of walks and a lot of homers.
Was it Covey?
It was Dylan Covey, 4.39.
Could be a good bullpen piece. I you know, I don't know if we expected to kind of lead off this podcast with Covey to a certain extent, but since his name was brought up, you know, he had that.
I was just trying to look at just zoom out and look at the pitchers years on a whole, and so I was just clicking around Baseball Reference, and I think I was encouraged by Lopez's year because the stuff wasn't really matching the results, even when his command of his off-speed pitches was getting better for the first half of the season in particular. And you started hearing these, it's always easy to ascribe things to shifts in a player's mentality, but when it's a player like Lopez where all the tools are clearly there to be a good starting pitcher, even if he'll never have the control to be a great one, hearing the quotes from him and from Narvaez and stuff like that about how he needed to like think about what he was doing instead of just trying to throw fastballs by everybody was interesting. I think James Fegan had a piece about his start in New York in particular where he didn't have his fastball because he didn't stretch, or which also is kind of like, wait, what? You only throw 30 starts a year. Like, come on, man, stretch like the 30 times you play. And he realized he had to pitch without his best velocity and how he progressed from there. You know, we'll see if he gains anything from that, but it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to say a 24-year-old starter figured out he couldn't just blow fastballs by everybody, and he has the capacity to throw good breaking pitches. So I'm encouraged there. He held up over 190 innings and finished strong. But Giolito is hugely disappointing. And I think, Frank, I'm going to steal this from you. I think you said for some starters, there's like one or two things where if you say this pitcher did X thing well or Y thing well, he probably had a good outing or not. Rodon, it was like first pitch strikes was a thing for a while. Whereas Giolito, it's like he needs like 8 things to all go well to have a good outing. Was that from you? Am I stealing that? Did we lose Frank?
I think we might have lost Frank. Is he on mute? Doesn't know he's on mute.
I'm here. I was muting. That is something that I think we've talked about before. The only way I might reframe it is that, like, it's not that he has 8 things where they all need to go well. It's just he's got a lot of different ways to fail. Like, I think which comes out of his, right, like, he was a blue chipper because he had so many things he could do well. And it's not that he's lost the ability to do any of those things at all. It's just he's got a lot of variance in all of his different pitches and his approach. And so he can have a good game that's curveball heavy or have a good game that's fastball heavy. But he can also have games where one of those just totally, you know, opens the door to a lot of carnage.
Yeah, the velocity is totally all over the map, too. Like 100's not in there anymore, and that's fine. But, like, he's hit 95, 96, and he has some outings where he can get there with some consistency. And then other outings, he cannot get above 91, 92. And it's, that's got to be, I don't know if that's something he can predict in his warmups or something like that, but that's got to be frustrating for him, and it's got to make it difficult to game plan, and it's got to make it really unpredictable. I feel like, and I could go back and look, he had a lot of outings where he'd get shelled in the first and then kind of recover as he figured out, okay, what pitches do I even have tonight? But that can't be the case going forward if he wants to stay in the rotation. Although, if that's the profile, it's kind of like Fulmer, where I'm like, I don't know that moving to the bullpen fixes it either.
I mean, the hope, right, is you pick up some velocity and that makes the whole thing a lot easier, right? That's my understanding of the whole, like, moving to the bullpen, is that it's, you can get away with a lot if your stuff goes up a grade because you can air it out.
Yeah, and you're not trying to hide a pitch for a second time facing a batter. You can, if he wants to come out and throw 25 pitches and half of them are curveballs in an inning, then he can do that if he wants. But yeah, I don't really know what to make of him, because the things that need to change for him to be a solid starting pitcher are all, it feels like it comes down to execution, just because of the things we're talking about, where it's all, he's got the tools, but I don't know if he can physically harness them on a regular, across 30 starts. I really don't know.
I think that's the most frustrating thing about this whole season is, I mean, given those individual performances, you thought coming into 2018, it was like, okay, regardless of how they do, like, wins and losses, you're going to have a better idea of what some of these players are. And maybe we do. Maybe the answer is Giolito's not a major league starting pitcher. But I feel like, across the board with some of the young guys, I feel like I don't have any. And maybe it's just me trying my best to stay optimistic, but I feel like I just don't have any more sense of what some of these guys are going to be as part of a potential, next contending team than I did at the start of the season.
We talked about this, I think, on the LA pod, is that, like, there's a lot of these dudes where you're almost stretching it out for these guys who, they're fringe major leaguers, but you're hoping that they can always figure something out, and there's a degree to which it's, shit or get off the pot, and a lot of guys seem to not have done either this year, where it's like, with the exception of maybe Yolmer, it's like, well, Delmonico and Angle and Davidson and Polka and
Narvaez.
And even Lurie. I mean, Narvaez is the exception. Narvaez can stick. But, and even like Rondon and Lamar and Cordell and Charlie Tilson and then, Dylan Covey. And it's like, with the exception of, I guess, seemingly all of the center fielders, there aren't guys where it's comfortable saying, like, yeah, they're done. Like, we can't count on them ever becoming anything better than, like, fifth outfielder. Everybody else, it's like, maybe they'll figure it out. Right? Maybe Polka will figure it out and become, go from 110 WRC plus to 125 or 130. It's all these guys. It's like, maybe they take another slight step forward, and they all run out of time. And so,
Polka's still got another has an option for next year, so I think that makes it a lot easier. I'm pretty confident being out on Delmonico. Sorry, Colin. But you're right. I mean, I guess you could argue that the biggest breakout of a meaningful player long term, I mean, maybe if you consider Lopez's year breakout in some senses. He did throw 188 innings with an ERA under 4. Like, that's pretty good.
Horrible peripherals.
Not horrible. Certainly not if you look at the... I mean, FIP has him at 4.64. Like, that's bad, but that's not like a disaster. And I could pull up his WARP or DRA, which I trust. DRA hates him, I think.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what I was starting with, is that...
Which is a better metric, but I think FIP is like... I think it's not quite as good as OPS, but I think it's pretty decent as like a shorthand for a lot of that stuff. But, Anderson's defense going from.
Yeah, he's replacement level according to WAR.
Yeah.
His DRA is 6.
So Anderson's Anderson going to like a plus defensive shortstop, which he always had the tools to do, but doing it over the course of a season and like cutting his, I think he cut his errors significantly as the season went on, is pretty big because, you know, if you have a 90 to 95 OPS plus with like really good base running and really good defense at shortstop, like that's a plus regular.
I mean, yeah, he was a 3-win player by BP's metric, which is, I mean, he was a replacement level player last year. You know, he was going through a lot of personal trouble, and like I said, his offense wasn't markedly different than it was last year. He, like I said, he did increase his power. He had minor differences.
Yeah, the underlying stuff was he made underlying improvements on his offense, but it didn't show up in his triple slash.
Yes. Like, I even think his BABIP was, like, 40 points lower, and he still, you know, put up, you know, good power numbers and whatnot. But, yeah, the defense, you know, he went from, like, I was just looking this up earlier. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something like a minus 11 FRAA to, like, a plus 8 FRAA this year. And that's, I mean, especially at a position like shortstop, if you do that and you're even just, like, slightly below average offensively, then you're a valuable player. And that's, you know, that's a big step for him.
And he is, like I said, you throw in the like really good base running too, and that's not nothing. Like it all adds up to
yeah.
to like a very like perhaps something more than just a guy who can hold the spot down and you don't feel bad about it.
Well, you know, base running is a big factor in the MVP debate for the National League too.
So. I mean, that's all right. Well, I want to come back to that.
We will.
Do you guys think, I mean, I think Davidson, Polka, and Delmonico, I'm sure Delmonico still has options left as well, though I'm not positive. Delmonico has to be behind Polka at this point, right? Or am I overrating, you know?
Yeah, they're both defensive zeros, and one showed that he has at least one notably good skill in.
Well, like Polka, they're both bad defensively, but like that, I think that flattens some of the difference between them. I think Delmonico is like acceptable bad, and I think Polka is unacceptable bad in the outfield.
Yeah, and well, I don't know when did they 100% gave up on Delmonico outside left, but it seems like. But you know, you'd like to believe. I think there's some idea that maybe he could conceivably play some right. I don't know. It's Yeah, he certainly doesn't look as bad out there as Polka does, that's for sure.
And I've talked about this, I think I mentioned it in an article, but I've talked about it in the Slack for sure, is like, it's such a shame, even for guys like Davidson and Polka, even if they do carve out a roster spot for themselves, like 10, 15 years ago, those dudes are just like platoon bats that you're thrilled to use, or especially in the National League, you just keep them around as pinch hitters or as a you know guy who starts once or twice a week because you're only carrying 10 pitchers and you're happy to have a guy who will come in for 300 at bats a year and crush 20 homers and
that basically like the Matt Stairs 20-year career basically once upon
yeah,
a time.
Yeah essentially maybe not as good as I mean Stairs was really good yeah, yeah.
Second half
Mankata I'm still in on, I think maybe he's like his, maybe you revise your hopes down to like 4 or 5 win player instead of like a 6 or 7 win player. But like, that's, you know, I think even if he doesn't improve, he's still okay. And I think there's room for him to get better. Pretty clearly.
He's got a ton of room to improve. And yeah, he had a fine year.
But not the same way that it's like, oh, Adam Engel will be 27 next year, therefore he'll break out on offense. Like, specific things where I see, like, where he's taking a bunch of third strikes, even if they're out of the zone, it's like, okay, he just needs to, like, get better on his defending the zone on two strikes sort of approach.
And a guy who has, like, very good, seemingly good pitch recognition, that seems like the sort of thing he ought to be able to get.
Yeah, like him striking out a lot isn't the same as like Davidson striking out a lot, you know, for as good as Davidson, or, you know, for the improvements Davidson made this year, it's, you know, Davidson's contribution on offense is that he can hit the ball a mile. And he made some improvements, you know, with his batter's eye, but you see a lot of guys who have a high strikeout rate, and that's generally because they, I think I just heard Chekhov, Nick.
Yeah, I had to get up because he had somehow locked himself in the bathroom and was in extreme distress. And now that I've released him, he's like, he's bellowing his triumph to his entire realm.
So, but you see a lot of guys who have high strikeout rates, and that's just because they, you know, kind of have no clue about the strike zone. You pound a slider outside the zone with two strikes, and he's going to flail, you know, flail away at it. But that's not the case with Moncada's strikeouts. It's kind of, you know, I don't even know, you know, where the precedent is for that, where, you know, what type of other players have that in their game where they actually have a keen eye of the strike zone. They just swing the bat really damn hard and also are patient enough that they take a lot of pitches that are closer to the zone than maybe they should be taking.
Yeah, I mean, like, he does, for a lot of the time, it seemed like he just didn't have a two-strike swing, because he's got plenty of bat speed, he's got the eyes, so you'd think you combine those two things, and it's like, this should be, it should just be easy. And there were some stretches where it looked easy, certainly before he tweaked his hamstring in, gosh, May or whatever it was. But, like, yeah, some of it, I think, is just approach and experience. I mean, it's... You know, he's 23. He has 900 major league plate appearances. Like, next year's a huge year for him, but I'm not out on him just yet at all. Because if he doesn't even need to change much. If this dude hits 250 or 260, he's got plenty of power and plenty of walks. He runs. I like his defense at second. FRA hates it. So, you know, split the difference on that. But
the thing that I keep trying to come back to kind of stay optimistic is I think if Moncada turns into that type of player, I think you know, if you look at his career as a whole and like what the expectations were, you know, when he was coming up in the minors, I think it would be a little bit of a disappointment. But it's not as if, you know, one of the things I wrote today is that not every top prospect you bring up has to be a star to build a winner. You know, if Moncada is a above average major league contributor, that's not a failure necessarily. You know, and the guy we haven't even really talked about, Eloy Jimenez, maybe he's your middle of the order star. You know, maybe you don't have a star. Maybe you know,
you go just, full. You go all. Oakland A's on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, you're not building a team like, you know, like the NBA where it's like, well, you need a bunch of stars to win. No, you don't. You just need a bunch of above average players, and you can build a contender out of that. You know, the Indians falling into, you know, a left side of the infield with two MVP candidates doesn't happen to everyone, and you that's not the recipe for every team to contend.
Right, and if not, right, the last two world champions out of the AL Central didn't have superstars, like, you know, if nothing else.
Well, and you've seen there are teams that have tried to do stars and scrubs. I'm blanking. I mean, the Indians have a lower win total than you'd think, even with arguably, you know, maybe four of the 10 best players in the league.
Two MVP candidates, two Cy Young candidates.
Yeah, and I mean,
and a stacked bullpen in theory. Yeah,
yeah.
You're doing the stars and scrubs thing because, like, you know, they've had problems with their outfield pretty much at every spot all year. They've had issues at second base, first base has been underwhelmed. So, like, we've seen the stars and scrubs on you know, as White Sox fans too. I mean, that's what 2016 was, for example. Gosh, I'm blanking. The Nationals, I'd argue, are an example of that not really working out. Some of that's luck, but, you know, you have, if I told you coming into the season that, like, Rendon and Juan Soto would have OPSs over 900, like, I'm pretty sure you guys would think they'd win like 110 games. But
all their top dudes would be mostly healthy. Scherzer would pitch just like Scherzer always has, and that they wouldn't make the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sniff the playoffs.
Yeah. Like not even close. So, and then by contrast, Oakland just has zero spots in their lineup where they don't have like an above average bat, like maybe catcher. So yeah, I agree with that. I guess this was part of the, in terms of zooming out on the state of the organization, as it were, I did a sort of roundtable article with a bunch of White Sox writers that's going to be published on Future Sox, I think on Wednesday, which was asking a few questions about different prospects and you know, how I feel about the organization and what concerns I have. And one of the fears is twofold. One is that what if this crop of prospects doesn't yield stars? Which is very possible. Like prospects are, you know, as we've seen from what's already made the majors and injuries and what's happened in the minors, like these dudes don't all work out, or they don't work out as much as you'd think. So you might not have the Chris Sale level stars, almost certainly not. But even a Quintana, Eaton, those types of guys, are you going to develop them? Even if you do develop a star core like that, is the organization going to support them wisely in trades and in free agency? That's something that is sort of up to ownership in the front office. We'll see. You know, that's a TBD, even if the track record is poor in that regard. But I'm just, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you're going to get that level of star level production. They're clearly trying to create more depth than they have in the past, and not to keep talking about the A's, but clearly that can work. Even looking at the Brewers today, looking at how often they just, wherever they could, grabbed a solid or above average player wherever they could or however they could, and it just adds up after a while. And eventually it's like, oh yeah, they just have too many good players for it not to work out.
They platoon you to death. You see the Dodgers do the same thing, especially during these expanded rosters. It's like they can plug in an above average player against whichever handed pitcher you throw out there at virtually every position.
Oh yeah, they had like Thames and Granderson and Domingo Santana and Keon Broxton just as outfield pinch hitters.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like that's nuts. So and they stacked a million relievers, ditto the A's. You know, they went out and added even Joaquin Soria.
All of the White Sox.
Yes, Soria and Cedeno, but I think that's one path, and I think the White Sox are particularly, they're in a position where they might have a huge, deep mega bullpen for a while, which can help teams punch above their weight. I'm a little concerned about where they get starting pitchers from, and yeah, I just don't know about this position player group. They spent three draft picks in a row in getting Fulmer and Collins and Berger, and you might wind up with a reliever and two okay first basemen, if that. Do you guys think Moncada moves to third? Because I don't know who else is the future at third base.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Baseball Reference page, the team, and it's like, you know, next year at least you got like good, you know, options you're okay with: catcher first, second, short. And then third is Yolmer, and I like Yolmer, but certainly you're not going to have anything stand in the way there. And so maybe if Madrigal moves quickly, you slide Moncada to third, and you make Sanchez a utility guy, and you put Madrigal at second. And then it's like left field, center field, right field, DH, and it's like a wasteland, right?
Left field's Eloy.
So left field's Eloy next year.
And you feel pretty good about that, I would think.
Yeah, I feel good about Eloy next year and left. But then it's like, how long is it going to take for, right? They have all these center fielders in the minors who are doing better than you'd think. And they have Luis Robert, obviously. And so, you know, are those guys going to be there in 2 years, in 2020? Are those, you know, are you going to, you know, you need another right fielder to replace Avi if he's not already gone by next year? So I worry that their guys haven't been good enough to shoot through the system. And then, you know, you end up where you've already started to run out of the usable time of guys like Yulmer or Lurie or, you know, some of the guys in the bullpen where they're already starting to decline by the time you have anything out of some of these prospects.
Yeah, the timing is an issue because even if you say, well, what's going on in the outfield, I feel pretty good that they'll have some options by 2021 because I think amongst, say, you know, Robert and Basabe and Gonzalez, that one of those dudes will be a decent center fielder. I feel, you know, you've got Rutherford, you have Adolfo, like you have some guys, you know, besides Eloy, and maybe you shouldn't be stressing too much about finding another corner outfielder, even if it's proven an impossible task for this organization in the past. But like those guys might be pretty far away if they do arrive at all. I mean, it wouldn't be weird at all for those three guys to all bust. And even to this discussion, even if I feel really good about Madrigal, I feel really good about him to be pretty good. I don't know that I don't feel him becoming a star is plausible, but it requires dreaming on him adding skills he doesn't have yet. It's particularly thinking of power, but you know, that he might be a guy who hits 280, 320, 390, 400 with good defense and speed at second base, which again is like a nice little player. But that's not covering up for flaws elsewhere because he's so good. So yeah, it's, I you'd like to have seen something more certain instead of continuing to have to speculate on uncertain future gains like everywhere. But yeah, it was kind of a rough year in terms of not just in terms of results, but just in terms of like seeing the next good team in front of you. It's all still
right. I mean, I think going into the year, there was the hope that this year they could win 70, 75 games, and you'd feel comfortable that they could go out and sign somebody, and in 2019 they could go challenge. And that's just – that was out the window by May, it felt like.
Well, here's the thing. If Kopech and Eloy had come up and played really well in September, I think even if everything else is the same, you'd be in a position where you could say, you know what, if we sign free agents and even if we don't make the playoffs next year, that's not a waste. Because, like, I know Eloy's still there and he hasn't changed, but we don't know. I mean, you pushed off him getting a look at Major League pitching by, you know, he lost a month in September and now he's probably going to lose at least the 2 weeks for him to, quote, work on his defense a little more before all of a sudden he's miraculously ready, a la Acuna and Bryant. Like, he might, you know, we've seen with Moncada, he's taken a while to adapt to Major League pitching, and that happens with a lot of guys. Like Rafael Devers is another, you know, really good prospect who had a mixed year this year because hitting Major League pitching is really freaking hard. And maybe that extra month would have really helped to go into the offseason with that. And then you could have said, okay, I mean, obviously Kopech getting hurt, what can you do? But you could have been in a position where, like, you know what, we are going to sign, be a little more aggressive in free agency. We are going to move our timetable up. And now to save maybe a few bucks in, like, 7 years or whatever, they did what they did, which...
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at this roster, though, and I'm thinking, right, so whatever. You know, they finished it exactly there, Pythag. They deserved their 100 losses. And so you say, okay, even in the ideal world where everybody's healthy and productive next year, you get 4 wins from Eloy and you get 4 wins from Kopech and you get 2 more wins from Moncada maturing a little bit and you go out and sign some more free agents and you get 6 or 8 wins out of those free agents and it's like, great, you did all of that and you're at 500.
Well, here's the
thing. I know, like, that's the simplistic, like, add up the war framework, which is I'm just working from in terms of the distance between this team and a team that's contending for anything. Is you want them to at least be a bit better than 500, and this team is really far from that.
They really are, but here, I guess the way I would look at it is, Well, first of all, I don't think waiting until you think you're pretty much ready to contend to sign free agents is always the way to go, because people thought this 2018-2019 class was going to be really great. But hey, like Charlie Blackmon signed an extension and some of these guys regressed, which maybe is a blessing for people who are going to sign them. And, you know, like AJ Pollock has now posted another year where he's like misses time and is pretty good, but not great. You know, the free agent class, I don't think it is nearly what it was ballyhooed to be. You know, people were planning for this 3-4 years out with their budgets and their luxury taxes. And there's going to be two or maybe one team that's really happy with Machado and Harper. And I mean, even Kershaw, who I, you know, is amazing. Like, even if the Dodgers let him, you know, let him go, he's not, you know, can you count on him for more than 150 innings? I don't.
Yeah. You're confident giving Kershaw 5 years at, you know, whatever.
With his back the way it is? Like, I don't know. But if you go around the diamond and you say, okay, you know, last year of Jose Abreu's contract, you're set at first base. Catcher Wellington Castillo and Narvaez, actually, I would argue, is one of the better catching situations in the majors. I think Anderson should be plus at short if his defensive gains hold. I don't think it's crazy to think he'll get, you know, more BABIP luck next year. If Moncada takes a step forward, that's either second or third is set. Eloy in left. I mean, Abastail's in his last year. Who knows what you're going to get from him if he does 2017 again. Like, that's most of the spots on the diamond. You're looking at, I mean, if you sign the two guys I've kind of joked about or speculated on who seem attainable and potentially on short deals for high value, if you do Pollock and Donaldson, that's like a lineup. Like, you're done. Like, that's a 1 through 9 lineup there.
Right. Which is at best, which has little depth and is best case some above average. And then the team doesn't have any pitching. Like, it's mostly, I think it's the landing on, oh, and the team has no pitching, where like at the beginning of the year, right, they had, at the beginning of the year, they had 4-5 starters you were hoping could improve, and you'd say next year we're going to count on them, right? Any set of them, right? You had Covey and you had Rodon and you had.
I don't think Covey. I think Covey's more in the plans now than he was coming into this year.
Sure, but like they basically going forward, Lopez is the guy you feel most comfortable going forward with, and Rodon, but Rodon didn't get better in the way we would have liked. And, you know, just a bunch of guys where you're hoping, oh, this is a real rotation. And Kopech's not a 2019 option. And I don't know. I feel so negative about this. It's just like.
Totally. I mean, the situation would be. And they're not going to make those signings now because for the reasons you stated. I'm laying out the case for if they called up Eloy. And if you take an aggressive look at things, because I don't think if you sign Donaldson to, even if he just wants to sign a 1-year deal to rebuild his value like Beltre did with the Red Sox, which I don't think is the worst comp for his situation. If you want to do that, or, you know, I don't think, even if he is hurt and ineffective, like that doesn't hurt you at all. Ditto Pollock, maybe, if he doesn't get the long term offer he wants, like. That doesn't, even if you sign for like 3 years, like the Edwin Encarnacion deal, like 3 years, like $60 million, like you've been running these just shoestring budgets. Like, this isn't going to hurt you in the slightest. And it puts you in a position to take advantage of if you do get the development you want internally. Obviously, Kopech going down is a big deal. But I would say on the optimistic side, which I'm always doing, I'm always the optimist. always the only one, the guys who are positioned to come up like next up to the rotation next year aren't Covey and Tyler Danish or Chris Beck or whatever.
Chris
Volstead or Santiago, which whatever, bring him back. I he was fine.
He's a lot less fun now that he stopped throwing a screwball.
Yeah, he's still cool.
I still like him. It's just, if you're going to be a like charming you know, fringe seventh starter long man. It's more fun when you're the only guy in the bigs who throws the screwball.
I think Jordan Stevens and Spencer Adams are more interesting next men up as back end of the rotation guys. Dylan Cease could be on Kopech's timeline next year. I think starting a year with a bullpen of like Jones, Fry, Hamilton, Burr, Frere, some of these, you know, even Covey out of the, I think that's a much stronger group than what they came into the year with. Like there's areas where they're legit strengths. It's just now they're in a position between what they did with Eloy and what happened at Kopech where they can just push the 2019 positive outcome timeline to 2020 and beyond, which, you know, when it's been, when the closest to like me having any sorts of playoff feelings this year at all, after they haven't been in playoffs for 10 years, is being really stoked that Joaquin Soria Pitt got one really good out today. In what is technically a regular season game. It's like, that's sad. That's freaking sad, man. Like, I'm jealous of Mets fans. They made the playoffs twice in the last like 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is. Like that's, it's been a decade. So telling me to wait, I guess what's one more year, but like, come on. Can I have anything nice, please?
You're a Packers fan, both of you. And so, you've burned all your karma there.
That's just, you could just fold that into, the Chris Sale sort of style of wasting an all-time talent.
Well, I mean, we did win a Super Bowl with him at least, but
yeah, that's good.
Also, I mean, I understand that making the playoffs is not the same in the NFL as it is in Major League Baseball, where you don't feel quite as positive, but like they've made the playoffs like what, almost every year with Rodgers, right?
Yeah, here's the counterpoint though. I don't care about football like at all compared to.
I mean, I agree insofar as the like would.
I mean,
I would almost trade like the, you know, I would almost trade like the Blackhawks' third cup for. I'd certainly trade it for a pennant, and I might even trade it for like a very like two division titles for the White Sox.
I would trade all three Stanley Cups for one more like World Series appearance.
I would not go that far. But
the Kane sexual assault stuff sucked a lot of the fun out of that for me. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah, it did. I mean, weren't we talking about this in the Slack? If you like, if you want to go, yeah, I mean, there's dudes that you don't want to look up on just about every team.
I know.
And Kane is more visible and
central.
You know, he's not Carl Everett. I agree, but
so. Right. Carl Everett was just like a mercenary brought in to fill a gap on the. Anyway, not this is all.
That was a solid tangent. That was a solid
secondary tangent. Stuff. I think the bullpen could be really good. I mean, hell, Fulmer could be a really good reliever next year too. Like the bullpen could run deep and very good. Like Bummer could be good next year too. Like you could have just like a full, the stream of really good relief dudes. Like I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Johnson is up and good next year in the majors.
God, Nick, you're so optimistic right now. I love
it. Well, I'm talking about everything but the rotation. And I just closed the free agents tab, and this is always, I guess, part of this conversation is like, I don't think they should try to sign Patrick Corbin because I'm super into next year. I think Corbin's arm is going to fall off. I hope it doesn't. He's cool. You're looking more at
Eovaldi.
I don't love enough. Yeah. Yeah. The durable.
Just watch. That's who
they're saying. Look, let's only sign durable guys. I'll rotate Garrett Richards, Tyson Ross. let's get Anibal Sanchez in there. Drew Pomeranz will be the durable ace of the staff.
Speaking with less irony, I almost feel like for the sake of my sanity, I want them to have someone who can fill the James Shields role where like
it could
I can
be James
count.
Shields.
Is yeah, it I mean, Cole? It could be James Shields. Are you?
Is it Cole Hamels?
He might be too good to fill that role insofar as other teams might want him. But I'm just saying, like, some guy where I can know that he will, like, come hell or high water, like, chug through the year, and they won't need to, like, bullpen half the, you know. Alternatively, if you think the bullpen's going to be good, they can just use the opener.
Hell yeah.
Right, because if you pitch them in the first inning instead of the fifth, it counts for more innings.
Yes.
I mean, they could just decide to have all of their starters on. They could just tandem everybody.
I think Charlie Morton's interesting. I don't know how the market's going to shake out for these dudes. I think Keuchel's interesting. I don't know how he's going to age because he's a late bloomer and he doesn't have a lot of margin for error. But then again, he will be 31. He's a crafty lefty. I don't know. I mean, like, that's an interesting one to me. There's dudes out there, but I mean, you need at least two of these guys. Like, if Lopez and Rodon are both threes, then you're closer to something. Anyway, I don't know if you guys had any more hot takes. I think the bullpen could be amazing next year, but relievers. So who knows?
That's why I think the bullpen could be amazing next year, is that somehow the 2017 White Sox had like seven good relievers, and you know, shit happens in the bullpen.
They found Kane Lance Warzak.
Yeah, maybe we could do more actual free agent speculation. You know, once October comes near an end, but I will say,
so we see how many of these options or buyouts get exercised.
Yeah. I will say, you know, from a prospect standpoint, we touched on it a little bit, but you know, for the amount of injuries they suffered at the minor league level this year, you know, Cease, you mentioned briefly, could be on the Kopech timeline next year. I think his his ascent could suddenly get more rapid, you know, where we could maybe see him toward the end of 2019, and if he continues developing like he did this year, you know, that's like the biggest bright spot from this year, at least, you know, from a prospect standpoint.
Other than Eloy, I guess. Yeah.
Other than I guess biggest surprise.
But yeah.
You know, was Cease basically went from like high risk, you know, insane variables in what people see to him to like legit top prospect. And I think he's still high risk probably. But him getting through an entire season like that and jumping levels, you know, him and, you know, Madrigal as the first round pick, is kind of a, you know, high floor kind of guy, seems like. And then just
Robert's kind of like a microcosm for like the season. But sorry, you were building to a point, and then I just threw that name.
But then like you know, we saw so many injuries and frustration, but like we did see, you know, Basabe took a step forward, and I know he kind of struggled a little bit toward the end of the year, but him jumping levels and you know, showing that he, you know, could maybe be a average to, you know, ceiling of an above average center fielder. I think Miker, you know, we saw more of Miker this year than we ever have before. Of course, he got hurt again, but he mashed when he played. I do think that there are more negatives than positives that came out of this season. You mentioned Berger, Collins, Fulmer. That's three first round picks right now, and none of whom you're all that optimistic about. But I guess that's kind of the benefit of stockpiling your farm system as heavily as the White Sox have tried, is that not all of them are going to pan out, but the ones who don't hopefully will be replaced by others who do.
Well, it was weird because, and maybe this goes back to the timing issue I was discussing, we were talking about earlier, where like the guys in the majors and at the upper levels were by and large the ones that got annihilated. Like, Kopech got hurt. Hansen got hurt and was ineffective. He was a guy who had pitched his way to Double A last year and was like a college guy who theoretically could have, like, if he had repeated basically what he had done the year before, he would have been a like potentially a September call up, and somebody you'd say, oh, hey, we'll start next year with Kopech and Hanson alongside Lopez and Rodon, and all of a sudden everything feels different, right?
Yeah.
And the guys in the majors, obviously Giolito, Fulmer, like Rodon, even like all these guys, Moncada, they all kind of stagnated at those levels. So you did get some really good stories in like high A and even into double A. But now there's like, on the one hand, maybe that means people are catching up to each other and you'll have this wave that's going to hit all at once in 2020 or 2021 instead of guys coming in a stream in 2019. I don't know that that's better or worse. But it definitely made it harder, you know, the closer you are to the majors, and once you're in the majors, the easier it is to forecast what's going to happen. So, like, yeah, but it's great that Basabe and Adolfo had good years in high A. But it was in high A. Like, I don't know what – I guess Basabe did a little bit in double A. But, like, you know, we're still – they still need to do a lot to where you before you can start trying to fit them into the major league roster at all. So – I think that's part of what's so frustrating about this year is that it was the upper level guys who mostly got hurt or stalled out.
Can I ask?
And this is where pedigree matters too, right? Is that if you know, it's great when some guy that you weren't who was a 15 or 20 in the system, you know, crushes high A. That's really positive, but it still means that that just makes you move him from like really fringe to kind of fringe. As and so all else equal, you know, your top prospects are way more important that you get the good outcomes from them than it is, right? If you get a good outcome and it turns out that you have, you know, the best fourth outfielder in the league, that's not that important.
I think Longenhagen in a chat said something like Eric Longenhagen over at Fangraphs. I think he said something like, generally speaking, you take a system's top 10 prospects over their next like 50 combined in terms of. You know, if you could just pick between the two.
I'm surprised you there's a number. I'm surprised that the 10 isn't more than the rest of the system. You know.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's basically the same thing, right? Like, yeah, so 10 is like you take them over everyone else. And obviously systems are different in terms of their depth and ceilings.
Most systems you take the top two over the rest of the top 10, right? Like,
yeah, probably. I mean, certainly – like definitely say the Blue Jays, maybe less so for like the A's. But yeah, it's a, you know, you say, oh, what if a guy comes out of your 15 top 15 or 20 and has like a massive year? I would argue like Ian Hamilton is kind of what that looks like, right? Like he was a 20 to 30 guy probably coming into this year. And he had about as good of a year as he could in double A and triple A. And he made it up to the majors and he looked decent as a really, and now you've got this like cool, probably cool reliever for next year.
Can I ask a hypothetical, and we can, I know we can wrap up pretty soon. I don't know if I necessarily believe the negative side of this, but at what point is it fair to start questioning this front office's ability to build a winner? It's a very like hot takey like sports radio host.
2013,
what?
2014, like.
Yeah. I mean, like I feel like Han has gotten the benefit of the doubt. You know, some might say a little bit too much. You know, obviously he brought this. He was the one who made the decision to go in the rebuild. And the rebuild, I think, buys you a few years to say, listen, I have a plan. We're going to do X, Y, and Z, and then it's going to build us a contender by this date. So I think, you know, the White Sox have had a lot of really bad season under Han's watch. Some of it's his fault. Some of it's not. Some of it's, you know, financial constraints. I'm just curious, like, if there's any thought there about, like, is there a point where they say this rebuild – and it maybe it's a couple years away, but is there a point where they say, okay, this rebuild isn't working. We don't like where our draft picks have gone. The free agents that we've signed, you know, the few that we have haven't really worked out. It's time to give someone else a shot. Is that anywhere near the present for you guys?
I mean, if you follow the Bulls, you'll have an idea of what the answer to this question is, even if the White Sox history.
Oh, I know. I know the White. I know. I'm just curious.
You know the White Sox. But, I mean, I think it's I've basically from like 90% of the decisions I was really out on, from essentially like the Martin extension through the 2016. Is that like, you got like an 8-year window where I was like, most of those decisions I was like, what, why would you do this? Like, this is extremely high risk and extremely low reward. And then like the good moves they made, they would still manage to torpedo, like, I don't know, acquiring Swisher for what they did, for instance. And that's going back a ways, but you know, I can't know who is responsible for what. Like, on the one hand, you say this front office, like Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn have been together in charge in some capacity for what, like 17 years?
Yeah.
They've made the playoffs twice. I mean, and then again, like, I don't know what direction they're getting from ownership. If ownership is vetoing good moves and approving, you know, not as good ones on top of like whatever budget restraints they're being given, or, you know, tying their hands in terms of what managers they have. I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah. Hahn, you know, having now like met him a couple times and seeing him speak and all that stuff, like, he's clearly a really bright guy. He is extremely charismatic with media and fans, and, you know, like, it's very easy to absolve him of blame for the things that you want to absolve him for. But like, man, I, you know, like, at a certain point, like, you know, scoreboard, right? Like,
yeah.
At a certain point,
I'm just wondering when that point
with,
is.
Well, listen, I guess my stance is, right, there's, right, the Bulls, it's like everything, right, the lurking thing for the last however many years has been like, things would be better if they just fired the GMs and found some new people to run basketball ops. And like, it's felt necessary. And I would say for Hahn, to me, it's like, if they decided that, you know, if they lose 90 next year and Jerry decides that's it and they go pull one of the, you know, rising stars off the market, I can't say that there's any, like, anything they do with Hahn at this point, I don't feel like it's urgent that they keep him. And so I wouldn't be upset if they fired him, but I don't think it's necessary for another. I'd say if I were in charge, he'd probably have 2 more years of rope. But if I were in charge, I'd probably actually know who gets credit for what, right? I mean, they.
Right.
If you look at what the front office has done, I mean, I don't know how good all these different front offices look, but they hit. They right, so Sale, Quintana, Eaton, and Abreu were all like, two of those came out of nowhere, and two of those were very gutsy calls that they got exactly correct. And I, without knowing the context, I can't know how much credit they deserve for any of that. But you right. know, it's probably more than none, but it's also not clear to me like what's repeatable in there. And so as soon as it gets into that, it's like, well, so what I can, you know, there, the right, Kenny's like, I don't know, whatever you'd call the equivalent of a carrying tool for a general manager, right, was like willingness to, I guess, like roll the dice on veterans with some upside.
Well, Kenny Williams repeatedly turned prospects who by like overwhelmingly didn't work out into like contributors to the rotation. Like, was like the consistent skill that he had in an era where those guys were, like, I'm thinking of the Freddie Garcia trade, even the Jake Peavy trade, which I was less sanguine about. Cologne, like, he kept getting these like number two, number three starters on like 2 and 3 year deals by trading guys who had good prospect value at the time, but like almost none of those guys turned into anything. And like, that's, you know, he. For a while, I think Kenny was zigging in when the market was zagging in good ways. I think that that rant, I think that, you know, the landscape changed and he didn't keep up is one way right. to potentially figure it out. But I mean.
Right. But, and then Hahn has, So somebody gets credit for the moves that I just laid out, though I don't know if it's
agreed.
The general manager specifically. And then Han successfully extracted an awful lot of – he did – you know, there was – none of the teardown trades, I don't think. People thought he didn't get enough.
No, and, I mean, some people were
like – that's a pretty – like, extracting full value for your veterans at the deadline is a, like – not the skill you want to build your team around. And so at that point, it's like, well, they, you know, they haven't been great drafting and they haven't, you know, like done well signing guys and they haven't won a bunch of trades except for the Eaton trade. And so like what leads me to believe he acquired a bunch of prospects and he did a good job with that. And so that earned him a little bit more leeway, but I don't see anything going forward where I can say this is what the team's going to be good at. They're going to be really good at identifying mid-career guys. They're going to be really – they're going to be innovative in figuring out how to do cool stuff with the draft. Like,
yeah, like coaching up post-hype prospects and, like, you know, like that. Like the Orioles are, you know, laughingstock for whatever reason, but, like, they made the playoffs three times in the last 6 years, and they found this niche where they could – find dudes with power and get them to like access it in games. Like for all that Chris Davis is a joke now, like they got him for basically nothing and he was a monster for a few years. Like Trumbo was really good for them a few
Jonathan
years.
Scope.
They picked up Jonathan Scope. They picked up like Tim Beckham. They even like got like turned into a useful thing for a while. They you know, they do some things well. I think like Han obviously, you know, depending on how much of a role he had before he was made GM, I don't know. He inherited a mess, I guess, when he came in 2013, clearly. But, like, you could argue he already had one shot at rebuilding. He built what he thought would, you know, what they thought they would contend with, and they maxed out at 78 wins. Like that's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing, like, I'll give him a slight pass on that for is that they ran out because they didn't have the depth, and I don't think there was anything that he had that would have given them the ability, right? Like,
if they don't waive, if they don't cut Tyler Flowers, does that give, that's what, four wins right there?
Yeah, I mean that's a huge error.
I mean, acquiring James Shields instead of like literally anything else, acquiring like the only
trading, you know, the whole like not losing any of the rebuild trades, right? They basically fomented someone's huge win by giving up Tatis. So, you know, as I said, it's hard for me to see what we didn't have to think a ton about what the franchise's sort of like identity, why we thought they were going to be good was because it was they were going to try to do some alchemy where they'd collect a giant amount of prospects. And they'd be like the Cubs, and you wouldn't have to think a couple years ago where it's just like, well, all their players are good, so they don't need to have a way that they build teams. And I don't see where that is.
The Cubs specifically stockpiled like a ton of bats, and like they skewed college bats, and like they did well on it. But like, and they figured you can acquire pitching in trades and free agency, which they were right about. Like and obviously they had some luck and they had some development successes, but I think. I mean, a lot of those moves in the 2015 to 2016 offseason and during the 2016 season were, like, so inexcusably terrible that there is real reason for concern. Because, like, yeah, like, Cease and Eloy are great return for Quintana. And I guess maybe the thing was they did a good job of deciding whom to extend, like, pre-arb, I guess. But, like... And maybe you say negotiation generally is a strength of the organization in terms of like what they're able to extract in these trades. But then again, it's not like it took like I knew about Eloy and I don't do this for a living like before he traded for him. Like I'd known about him for a lot of these dudes like Moncada. A lot of these guys are not, you know, you have this really valuable thing and you traded them out for.
Wasn't Eloy the highest dollar IFA the year he signed?
It was either him or Glaber.
He also
I think.
Broke out at the. He was like the star of the futures game, either that year or the year before. He was like the breakout dude who was hitting.
But even
mammoth home
even
runs.
Like I'll give them credit for creativity for like stacking the types of assets they did to the Yankees to get say Rutherford back, but like Rutherford is not It's not like he's – it's not like and maybe I'm not remembering this correctly, but even like Willy Adames, who I think is like a similar prospect value. I mean, like Willy Adames, when the Rays got him for Price, people were like, who? Like what? Like yeah. He's the centerpiece. Whereas like Rutherford was a guy who was in top five consideration coming into the draft. He was like a big bonus dude. He was like a top 100 prospect. Like that's not like, you know, it's not like he's going off board to get, you know, huge pieces.
Yeah, though we wouldn't view the deal favorably if he had.
Agreed. And that's not to say that's not to say public evaluators aren't getting better, certainly at catching the guys who are huge. You know, it's hard to sneak like an Eloy Jimenez by the time he gets to high A pass, you know, all the public outlets. I'm not dinging Han for getting a ton of top 100 prospects. But like what I'm saying is I'm agreeing with you, Frank. Like I don't know. Like we'll see.
The hypothetical I want to pose in response to Colin's previous hypothetical is, when will the last BP Southside podcast occur where we relitigate 2016?
That's until they make the playoffs again. Yeah. That's gonna bother me forever.
I think that's the answer.
Being told the only help I get for not having even a replacement level DH right or right fielder, that the help the team, the offense gets is James Shields and Justin Morneau in a few months. Like, are you kidding me? Like, are you, what, why trade for Laurie? Why trade for, I think like Wendelken had a really good year this year, by the way, who was traded for Laurie for Oakland. Like Semien has also, you know, continued to be really good. I know that's the Samardzija trade. Yeah, Wendelken threw – it was only 16 innings, but he had an ERA under one, so that's pretty good.
Speaking of
– also, can I just be very thankful that on this podcast, when we're relitigating 2016, at least we're relitigating that and not, like, anything else that people on Twitter usually are referring to when they dredge up all the arguments from that year?
Oh, I see what you're saying, but I just wanted to if we're gonna keep with the podcast trends, I just before we go, I need to sneak in fuck the Royals. I know they lost 105 games or whatever, but that's just a theme of this podcast is to bash the Royals for years now. So just wanted to say that real quick.
I mean, like to close out on zooming out of just the White Sox, you know, where it's a whole bunch of TBD. The Brewers did win the NL Central today by beating the Cubs with a lot of former White Sox on that Brewers team.
Oh, yeah.
Key contributor Tyler Saladino.
Right.
Albers.
Which, you know, I think we did this correctly by instead of – if we had been recording mid-game, then the Cubs definitely come back and win. Like, yes. Baez hits a walk-off the ninth, I think, or whatever. Whatever inning that bat was against Soria.
I just saw the Rockies are starting Freeland on 3 days rest tomorrow. So, it's an interesting choice by the Rockies. So it'll be
fun. Oh, is it? I didn't even see how that game finished. When I left, the Dodgers were up 2-0.
It was 5-0 going into the ninth, and I think the Rockies scored two in the ninth. So 5-2, the Dodgers won.
Oh, there you go.
The Rockies are flying to Chicago. And yeah, like I said, Freeland is getting the start on 3 days rest against John Lester tomorrow night.
Do you guys have any predictions for the American League playoffs before we wrap?
I went back to our the BP season predictions just the other day just to see how I did. Let me first point out that I did predict Jacob DeGrom to win NL Cy Young, so pat on the back for me.
Well, he hasn't won it yet, Colin.
It's true. He should also win NL MVP, but anyway, I said Yankees Dodgers World Series at the beginning of the year, so I'm gonna stick with that. I think I feel like
how do you check? I'm trying to pull up my predictions. I can't find this.
I don't know. I just went back to like March in the archives and found the article. March or April. Awesome. I don't remember which.
Oh, nice. All right. I'll find it. Keep on. Sorry.
Yeah. my job has me so ingrained in like East Coast stuff. I mean, your guys actually live there, so probably even more so for you guys. But I feel like I hear, like, nobody talking about the Astros in the American League, which doesn't really make sense because they're the defending World Series champions and won 100 games and all that good stuff. American League is just going to be fun as hell. I think that's accurate. American League is just going to be fun as hell. I mean, the team with the fewest wins in the American League is the Indians. And like we said earlier, they have two MVP candidates and two Cy Young candidates. They have a stacked rotation. They have, you know, a bullpen that struggled a lot through the year, but still have, there's still, you know, veterans and guys who have been there before kind of thing. Like literally any, you know, I guess you could say this about both leagues any year, but I could see any of the five teams left in the American League making the World Series. You know, Oakland is, you know, the least star powery, but they've just been beating the brains out of everyone for 3 months now.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be very sad when Oakland seemingly inevitably loses to the Yankees, just because they're so much more fun. They're like the only team I can like feel no sadness in rooting for in the AL. And so far as they're not.
No asterisks on them.
Same.
Right. There's no, like, you know, lesser. They're not like rooting for a juggernaut, and they're not, you know, Chief Wahoo or a division rival. And so that puts them ahead of everybody else, and their colors are sweet, and Oakland's fun. So I'm pulling hard for them, no matter how hard it is.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I'd love an Oakland, like, Brewers World Series, I think, is my current, my favorite matchup. I do love the, like, I mean, obviously, Matt Chapman is, like, an MVP caliber player.
Love that.
But then, and then just, like, Chris Davis and just going through, like, Piscotty, like, really Lowry. Had a huge bounce back here. Lowry, like, this, it's just a fun team. And even, like, Martini and Laureano coming out of freaking nowhere. Like, yeah. I don't know what the hell that is, but, like, that rules, too. Their bullpen is freaking nuts.
Training.
I was trying to track, like, the use Mario Petit always being on, like, sneaky on a winner. But, like, Trinan, Trevino, even Buchter's been really good. But, like, they added Familia. They added... they freaking added, where is he? Fernando Rodney. That's it. Like Sean Kelly. Like they just have so many dudes in the bullpen. That's a fun team. Looking at my predictions, I had the Rays last in the AL East, almost. I think part of why Houston's gotten overshadowed is like fatigue as the repeating champions and like the Red Sox. Like you can't like the Astros were the second most juggernaut team this year in the AL. So like, people don't really talk about the second most of a thing as much as the first most.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I
do feel like the fatigue wouldn't be there as much. I hate to be this guy, but the fatigue wouldn't be there as much if they played on the East Coast or like in Los Angeles.
And I had Trout, Lindor, Betts for MVP in the AL preseason. And then Ohtani Torres is the rookies of the year.
So I had good. Trout at first and Betts at third, and then I had Ohtani and Torres, and then the person that I had second for AL MVP is Gary Sanchez, and I do not remember what prompted me to put that.
I think Lindor was a better pick than Sanchez. I'm gonna go out on a
list. I think I was trying to contrast the market, and I don't think it was a horrible pick to contrast the market insofar as, you know, a catcher with a huge stick on a competing team was not a like a
Yankee
process was like, horrible, but the outcome was very bad on that guess.
Ooh, I had Corey Seager as my number two for MVP, which
I guess Corey is like number
I had Harper, one. Seager, Goldschmidt. That does not look great.
I don't have my but I know I had Seager on my list.
Goldschmidt, Seager, Harper, and then rookie of the year in the NL, I had Lewis Brinson, Acuna, and JP Crawford.
I had Lewis Brinson.
Whoops. Scherzer, Greinke, Syndergaard for Cy Young.
So two out of three.
Three people picked DeGrom to win the NL Cy Young out of like the 50 who made predictions, and it was me, Paternostro, obviously, and then Matt Trueblood. We were the three who picked DeGrom.
Nice. Yeah, no, these are fun.
Looking back at these, is that if you pick chalk and it doesn't go well, then you can say, well, it was a good process.
Yeah.
And if you pick not chalk and it doesn't go well, then you can say I had to mix it up. Couldn't pick all chalk.
That's like Rick Hahn's prospect acquiring theory. That's why he gets all the top 100 guys. It's like, well, the industry loved it. It was a good process.
CYA approach to forecasting.
We were talking about this a little bit in the Slack. Like, if the Brewers are potentially a model for the White Sox path forward,
the White Sox should trade for Christian Yelich.
Yeah, right. Signing Same. Kane and trading for Yelich. There's always going to be some team that's under duress that's selling assets that like they really shouldn't. But I think this past winter's Marlins was like a real. And the Brewers are such a poster child. I'm so glad they rewarded me for this because I was like, look, the big problem with tanking is it puts you in a position where you can't take advantage of opportunities. And like you wouldn't think Kane would be available that cheaply. And you wouldn't think Yelich would be available, but they were, and the Brewers had acquired enough solid players all over the diamond that they were like, yeah, we could contend next year, and they did, and they were right, and it was great.
Somehow, with that rotation too.
And with Jimmy Nelson out, I was like concerned, and I thought they should go a couple steps further. Obviously,
sign like Lance Lynn and Alex Cobb and whatever back then when they were available,
like. I didn't think Chacin would be this good.
Yeah.
They got a lot out of like Wade Miley, which yeah. I didn't think would happen.
Well, he left Baltimore, like, so.
But yeah, mega bullpen. Maybe that rotation's even like a sign for how the White Sox could succeed, where it's like just get a bunch of dudes who'll throw 140 innings of league average ball and then just like bullpen people to death.
Yeah.
But see, if you're a tanking team, then you do have the opportunity to take advantage of, you know, people offloading things. It's just, you know, what you have the ability to do is give Daniel Polka 450 plate appearances.
True.
Which is somehow less fun than you know, trading for Christian Yelich and NL MVP.
But teams have taken those plate appearances in fallow years to find stars. But that's part of what sucked about 2018 was the White Sox didn't. I mean, as much as I enjoy Paul,
you hope that one of those guys is Jose Altuve, and that's like trading for Christian Yelich. It doesn't usually turn out that way.
Instead, you found out Carlos Rodon is Matt Moore, and now I'm like really depressed.
Fuck. Let's end on that note.
I did have a more fun note to end on, but I've now forgotten it.
Christian Yelich ended the season with exactly 1,000 OPS. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, the Whites. Yeah. Well said, Frank. Go A's, go Brewers.
I'm stealing Jeff's bit.
Wait, what are you guys that...
You're stealing the Aristocrats, that's what you're doing.
That too.
Yeah. Give on the record for the 30 people who listen to this your actual... What's the World Series going to be? Not what you want, but what it's going to be.
It's 2018. Everything is horrible. So it's going to be
the Cardinals somehow.
Yeah, right. No. I'd say it'll be. It's going to be Cubs. I'm trying to think of which would infuriate me more: Red Sox or Astros. It's going to be Cubs, like Astros.
Why would Astros infuriate you more than like the Yankees?
Yeah.
Because the
Osuna thing.
Osuna is obnoxious. People act like they shouldn't have gotten Bregman at all. Like, yeah. I don't think they should have gotten that pick back.
I forgot about your Astros angst.
Well, like, I don't know, man. Like,
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Like, oh, the
guys
like,
they have on field are a lot more fun than the guys the Yankees have on the field.
Yuli Gurriel really bothers me. And how they had that whole, like, he got to play in the World Series and like, oh, yeah, we'll suspend him next year. And then he was like on the DL. Yeah. For like that time anyway, like that drove me insane and like no one cared.
Verlander's becoming the old baseball crank all of a sudden.
Yeah, Verlander's like a weird maybe like yeah, he like yells at young non-white players a lot. No, like there's a whole lot not to like about the freaking Astros. Certainly to repeat, like that would be frustrating.
No, like Frank said, I can find something to frustrate me about every AL World Series team except the A's.
The Yankees probably bother me like the second least.
For me, it's Cleveland is second, at least.
I mean, division rival, Chief Wahoo, Trevor Bauer. Like, I can...
I said second least, I didn't say I'm enthused about them. The fact that I'm not calling them by their name gives you hints as to why I don't like them.
It's between them and the Yankees for me, but I mean, like, I grew up in the New York area. My mom was a Yankee fan. Like, I always felt like the Yankees, there was something... It's frequently infuriating, but there's something endearing to me about the fact that they're very honest about what they are. They're just like, yeah, we spend the most money and we'll, like...
It's like Calipari in college basketball.
I don't know enough, because, like, I can't remember which scandals he has of the college.
Probably some shitty ones. I just enjoy the whole, like, yeah, come play for me for a year and I'll make you an NBA lottery pick.
But, like, the Yankees, like, a lot of the stuff they've been doing well lately under Cashman is stuff that, like, I can't even get mad at them for. Like, yeah, like, they traded for Didi Gregorius, and Gregorius is super cool. And, like, they, you know.
They arbitraged Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
The one thing that I try to do when I try to think of, like, most fun teams, least fun teams, is I do this silly hypothetical where put that roster in uniforms that I have no positive or negative attachment to, and which one would I enjoy the most? And I think in the AL, that answer would be Cleveland.
I mean, Chapman is really bad, but, like, I love Glaber, I love Didi. Andujar is cool. Hicks is, like, a pretty funny, like, failure of the Twins, which I always enjoy. Judge is sweet. Stanton is sweet. Like, Severino, Tanaka, Sabathia are all super. Like, it's a fun team, man. Like, they got David Robinson.
The Red Sox can pick up a lot, however, if Sale shoves.
Oh, yeah.
If Sale
turns into Bumgarner, that would substantially take the sting out of my watching them win.
I would love that, but then part of me, I mean, I guess he's going into the hall with a Red Sox hat regardless, right?
Fuck. No, he's going to come back. He's going to come back how in the last couple years.
Like, I don't think he's not going in as a White Sox, right? Because, like, I don't think he remembers it fondly. But that's speculation on my part.
I think my pick, since I'm looking at my preseason pick, and it was the Dodgers, so I got to stick with them. And then I guess at least for what I'm predicting. And then I guess I'd say probably Astros to match up with them. So rematch from last year. And then what I want is not the Cubs and not Atlanta, and then against the A's.
Yeah.
I don't really care among the Dodgers, the Rockies, and the Brewers. There's things to like and things not to like about all of them, but on balance, I like all of them more than I don't like them.
Yeah, those three are cool. I mean, you have to pick. If you're actually picking, you just have to, like, you have to pick one of the division winners right now. Like, you can't pick
a winner. Win, yeah. But...
Yeah, I mean, you picked both. I mean, you said you'd like to see Colorado not the Cubs. So, yeah, no, you could still have bad luck on that. But, yep. Colin, are you going to go Braves, Braves, Yankees just to be weird?
No, I said my preseason prediction was Dodgers Yankees, so I'm sticking with that. I don't remember who I picked to win. I think I picked the Yankees to win, so let's stick with that. I hope I'm wrong.
All right. Well, that's what's going to happen. We'll find out in 6 months when we pot again.
All right. Well, good talking to you guys.
Likewise, man. Night, guys.